training and different policies and different oversight systems. I don't think that that can ever work the way the union contracts are. OAR also wisely points out that some experts, so-called, claim that the police need to be interviewed 24 hours or more after a shooting or death incident because their memories will be affected by adrenaline and other factors. Yet, as OAR says, such delays are not afforded to civilian criminal suspects. They imply that the PPA, Portland Police Association contract, should be changed to allow immediate interviews of officers, and we would support that. OAR recommends that officers not be allowed to make emotional pleas to the Use of Force Review Board or the Police Review Board now when shootings and deaths are being considered. Chief Reese did agree with that recommendation, though he admitted the language they used about the emotional pleas. OAR recommends the Independent Police Review Division and Internal Affairs go to the scene of the shootings. It's been talked about by Mr. Bigham, as CRC also brought that up, and we support that as well. OAR recommends Internal Affairs conduct investigations into supervisory issues, which were apparently discouraged by people in the Bureau. It should be noted that we discussed this idea as having a finding called supervisory issues in cases where the supervisor's actions may not constitute misconduct because they may have broadly given officers under their command faulty instructions. That's what happened in this case. These officers didn't get blamed because everybody in the transit unit was taught to knock people down. We appreciate and agree with OIR and Commissioner Leonard that if a supervisor breaks a specific directive, he or she should be investigated separately from a line officer under scrutiny, but a broader finding calling for a debriefing and or a retraining would help as well. And I'm just going to throw in here that I'm sort of surprised that the commander who was in charge of transit is now sitting on the board of Cascadia. If there's some irony there. OIR recommends the Bureau allow the public to see portions of the crisis intervention team training. We've been asking you that for a long time. The chief agreed, except he feared compromising public and officer safety, which is different from the previous objections we've heard, which about hindering open communication by officers. It was also good in the report to get information that wasn't necessarily clearly stated previously, such as the officers sat in their patrol car while Mr. Chassie was in the back seat and they filled out paperwork. They carried him to the car instead of driving closer to him. The medical examiner's opinion said the way he was carried may have caused his punctured lung, and that the decision to hire Deputy Burton while he was being investigated was made by the highest levels in the Bureau. In addition, they note that the officers were that officers in general are coached to speak with lawyers at depositions in a way that is not unvarnished and candid. And this is what this county attorney wanted the internal affairs to use the depositions as their administrative investigation. OIR makes a good suggestion to prohibit officers from signing off on behalf of a suspect for medical purposes. We think that the directive, after it was changed, calls for a piece of paper that identifies who made that decision to be destroyed. I'm not sure if OIR found that or if maybe it got changed before they looked at it. Robert King, when he was head of PPA, agreed with Portland Cop Watch that piece of paper is crucial for accountability, so we know who told the ambulance either to take the person away or to have him go to jail. We're very glad to see OIR's repeated focus on the officer who allegedly told witnesses Mr. Chassie had 14 drug convictions and that they had found cocaine on him and that officers and paramedics were laughing on the scene. Of course, just pointing that out will not go back and change the outcome because these things were not investigated. I'm going to skip to the missing section because I'm getting close to my time. Unless I'm missing something, I don't see any recommendations against kicking civilians in the head, breaking their ribs, killing them, laughing about the way they went down hard, or other issues of concern to the community. It's interesting, OIR suggests that most police departments can't subpoena civilian witnesses. City Council, of course, has just given IPR that ability. And at the time of the investigation, the Bureau could have asked Council to subpoena the civilian witnesses they couldn't get to come in. We realize the Bureau has agreed to and or has started work on many of the recommendations. Unfortunately, they have not changed their practice of doing so without seeking community input. The use of force policy, which we've been talking about, which is perhaps a step forward, still has a phrase in it about totality of the circumstances, which seems to us allows a lot of legal wiggle room. The public should be invited to comment on these new recommendations at a citizen review committee meeting at the very least. And the OIR makes a recommendation about the performance review board not having officers appear before them, but it doesn't say anything about this issue that we caused so much controversy a few weeks ago about whether the officer supervisor should be allowed to vote. And we hope that the stakeholder group's recommendations will be taken more seriously in the future, and we appreciate Commissioner Fritz supporting the vote in that case. We're most disappointed by the fact that OIR outlines various acts of misconduct for which the officers involved will never be held accountable. Officer Humphreys stated that he did not land on chassis, then changed his story, said he used the proper tape down, but he bragged otherwise in the jail video. None of the Bureau's foot pursuit training was clearly violated. The Bureau's foot pursuit policy, rather, was clearly violated in apprehending Mr. Hesse. And it is surprising that Sergeant Nice is assuming responsibility as the on-scene sergeant after being involved in such a violent confrontation was not against any existing policy. I'm glad they've recommended changing that. An appropriate code of this story would be to let the public know whether the officers actually served their 2 weeks off or whether they went to mitigation or arbitration to get that minimum punishment reversed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Iona, welcome.
Good evening. Oh, geez. Is that working or am I too far away? Oh, thanks.
Yeah, nothing actually
closer.
Moves.
Okay. No, the wooden thing
moves. Oh, that thing? Okay. I think maybe this is okay. Thanks. Good evening, Mayor and Commissioners. I am Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League would like to thank Auditor Griffin Vallade for facilitating OIR Group's report on the in-custody death of James Chassis Jr. The report provides a wealth of information, valuable recommendations, and is responsive to public concerns. The League has been involved in issues related to the Police Bureau and our oversight system for a number of years and appreciates the opportunity to comment on the report. Although the OIR report does not provide clarity about IPR's role in the chassis investigation, we are encouraged by its recommendation that IPR consider informing the community of the status and progress of ongoing investigations. On the third anniversary of Mr. Chassis's death, the Oregonian published a guest column expressing outrage over both the incident and the length of time it was taking to complete the investigation. IPR was not mentioned in that column or in other related news stories. The League suggested to the IPR director that she could provide a service to the community by submitting a response explaining the IPR's role in ensuring a thorough, impartial, and timely investigation. She did not act on our suggestion. We encourage IPR to follow OIR's recommendation and keep the public informed about ongoing investigations. Knowing that an independent entity is overseeing critical investigations and working to ensure that they are thorough and fair should result in increased public trust. Furthermore, as OIR suggests, IPR presence at critical incident scenes will send a powerful message to the public that our oversight system is taking its responsibility seriously. The report highlights serious issues with the Transit Police Division. The division consists of officers from various jurisdictions governed by the policies of their home agencies and held accountable to those policies. The chassis case illustrates the problems associated with such a disjointed system. If it is not possible to design a multi-jurisdictional system in which officers operate under one set of policies and are held accountable to those policies, then the city should consider recommending that TriMet take responsibility for its own policing. OIR points to the importance of supervisory instruction during critical incidents and urges IAD to explore these issues in the course of their investigations. The Police Oversight Stakeholder Committee is considering adding supervisory management issues to the potential findings in misconduct cases. We urge you to keep the OIR recommendation and commentary in mind when the committee's recommendations are presented to you at a later date. The report reveals a lack of clarity around medical decision-making. In the interest of safeguarding the welfare of our community members, decisions about an individual's medical status and transport should be left to trained medical professionals. Bureau policy should make this clear and require documentation when those decisions are made at the scene of an incident. In his acceptance speech, Chief Reese expressed his belief in the importance of public involvement in police policy. With that in mind, the League urges the Chief to share draft policy proposals inspired by the OIR report with the Citizen Review Committee and the public. This will give the public the opportunity to provide feedback and assure the community that the Bureau takes seriously the importance of learning from the tragic death of James Chassis. As OIR pointed out, the Bureau already has made a number of significant policy improvements in response to his death. The League hopes additional changes will be discussed with the CRC and the public before adoption. In the interest of facilitating and improving the quality of public participation, we encourage the auditor and council in the future to schedule hearings on critical reports such as this one at least a week after their release. Again, we would like to thank the auditor and OIR for the valuable report. We also appreciate the willingness of the Bureau to provide OIR with the access it needed to do its job. Thank you for considering the League's views.
I want to thank each of you for your testimony tonight. Carla, I understand we have two people. Two people who've signed up. Okay, if you could call their names.
Tom Steenson and Chani Geigel-Teller. Please come on up.
Welcome to City Council. We just need you to state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Sorry. Yeah. Hey, my name is Shani Geigley-Teller, and just before I start, I have to say that I know some of you from other places, and I'm not here in any official professional capacity tonight. But I am here because I'm a concerned citizen who's been working downtown for the last 6 years with people surviving mental illness and drug addiction. I'm also a member of Portland Cop Watch. I just felt like it was really important to point out that there are reports like this before. For like the last at least decade, I've read them as a member of Cop Watch. And I think it's important to point out that if our elected officials had taken those reports seriously, James Chassie might not be dead. I appreciate the steps forward being taken by the council and the community lately, and I appreciate the report and the recommendations, but I also feel like it's really important to point out that there is wisdom in the community that often falls on deaf ears, and I feel like all of the recommendations made in the report probably could have come out of people who are sitting in this room today and who have been working on these issues for decades, and we would have saved probably a whole bunch of money, and possibly we could have put a little bit of that money into treating and supporting people who are experiencing mental health issues. I have to say that I feel that the community needs you to fire Humphreys, Burton, and Nice to start with. They need to be fired. Their actions before and since they murdered James Chassie only show that we are not safe with them on the street. They need to be fired, and then they need to not be hired back. We need to make sure that the police union contract negotiations are kept open to the public. I think that it's our business and it's our community and our safety. At the scene of Chassie's beating, officers said to the public that he was homeless and a drug user, as if those things would have made it okay for how they treated him and how they killed him. Afterwards, when I was working in some low-income housing downtown, we had our community meeting, our weekly community meeting, and after the story broke, people who I was working with asked me if they were safe and if the police would do to them what they did to Chassie, and I didn't know what to say. Since then, the CIT training has been implemented, and all the officers have been trained in certain competencies and de-escalation tactics. And if those same people were to ask me again if they were safe now, I would have to say no. And I'd have to say, well, let's ask Jackie Collins or Aaron Campbell or Keaton Otis. We can't. They just died a few months ago at the hands of the Portland Police Bureau while they were experiencing mental health crisis. All officers who are CIT trained, by the way. So I'm done, actually. I just wanted to say that we've been working on this as a community for a really long time, and I want to just publicly say that as the community, our hearts and our work is still with the Chassie family, and we'll continue to do the work that we need to do until we can be safe from police brutality in our communities.
Thank you very much. Mr. Steenson?
My name is Tom Steenson. I represent the Chassie family. I'm also here as a citizen of the city. Unfortunately, I've been representing families who have been experiencing the death of a loved one shot and killed by the Portland police or who have died in custody for 25 years. And I wish I could say that this is different, but it's not. And I think Jason probably addressed some of the major issues I'd like to touch on that I think the OIR did not touch on and that the city continues to ignore and fail the citizens in addressing. First of all, not only did the IED get the facts wrong, OIR has the facts wrong. Some of the crucial facts that have been ignored is that Humphreys recognized that James probably suffered from mental illness when he first saw him. Humphreys was trained in how to address and deal with someone who suffered from mental illness. He ignored his training. Instead of de-escalating the situation, he escalated the situation. That was ignored by IED. It was ignored by OIR. He described James as looking like Forrest Gump. The crime was that he thought, if you actually look at what Humphreys says, he was pissing in his pants, which is not a crime. He ignored, according to OIR's disclosure for the first time after 3 years, of the training division's finding that Officer Humphreys did not follow his training in either pursuing Chassie because of the non-existent crime or in crashing or taking him to the pavement, whether by knocking him down, which is Bureau approved, or by tackling him. Every eyewitness who had a good view, there's three of them, if someone actually looked at the record, who saw James taken down, describes it as a tackle. Nice describes it as a tackle in his initial homicide interview. Humphreys says it's a tackle in the jail tape. Burton portrays it as a tackle in the jail tape. 3 days later, after an inexcusable delay by the homicide detectives in interviewing Humphreys, I suspect it's because Humphreys has consulted with his union representative and his lawyer, he all of a sudden describes it as a knockdown. Later, Nice also has a fading memory, and it no longer is, as he told the homicide people, a bear hug tackle, but something else. As part of the cover-up in this case, Humphreys claims that breadcrumbs he found, probably from a sandwich that James was eating, was cocaine. Burton describes it on the scene as breadcrumbs. Nice claims that Burton shows him a drug bindle. Burton says there was no drug bindle. The deception and misleading attempt to stick drugs in James's system or on his person was designed to denigrate him and reduce him in the eyes of the medical people. There was no disclosure of the fact that James was unconscious or not breathing for 30 seconds to a minute to the medical personnel. Nice twice refused to allow AMR to transport James to the hospital, which certainly would have saved his life. If the dozen or so civilian eyewitnesses had been interviewed effectively by either the homicide detectives or IED, who didn't interview but one of them, it would have been learned that the eyewitnesses saw James struck repeatedly with fists, kicked in the head, stomped on, dropped on, smashed back to the pavement. The point is that I think it's true, correct me if I'm wrong, but in 25 years, not a single officer that I'm aware of has ever been disciplined for any use of force or the line in the cover-up associated with the use of force in a shooting death or an in-custody death. And as Jason describes it, the two-week suspension afforded Officer Humphreys and Sergeant Nice, not for the use of force and not for their line, but for non-disclosures of, or the failure to recognize medical symptoms, is not what's really going on here. And in every death that I've seen, it's the same.
Mr. Steenson, I've extended your time to 5 minutes. If you could wind up.
there has been a consistent and repeated effort, conscious or otherwise, resulting in a failure to discipline officers. And as a result, I think the citizen believes that they can act with impunity when they use excessive force and they lie about it and attempt to cover it up. That's an issue that has been ignored by IED. It's been ignored by OIR, and I suspect will be ignored by the council. And I respectively dissent completely from the acceptance of the OIR report, given its inadequacy as to the facts and its failure to address the systemic problem of this city in disciplining or terminating officers who use excessive force in killing people and lying and covering it up.
Thank you, Mr. Steenson. So, sir, you know the rules. You've been here many times. Carla, are there any more witnesses?
That's all who signed up.
So we're now going to shift to council discussion. And first I want to ask my colleagues, Mayor Adams and Commissioner Fritz, if they have any additional questions they would like to pose to OIR or to the auditor, and we can invite them back. And if not, we can proceed to a vote. Mayor Adams?
I'll let Commissioner Fritz go first.
So I'd like the chief to respond to that last comments regarding discipline, because I know that when we've been looking in recently at police accountability issues, though there have been, I think, 33 officers who've either left the force, resigned, or been terminated. I don't know what the cause for that was, but could you just respond to that particular allegation that there's been no discipline for any in custody deaths or excessive use of force?
I think it's hard to look historically at these cases. They're very different, and I don't have the numbers for the different decisions that have been made by
Chief.
Chiefs.
Let me just jump in here for a sec, because it's not, I mean, and respectfully, Mr. Steenson, the attorney for the families, raised that issue. I don't know if you don't have the data or the information with you, it could be something you could furnish to council if you prefer.
I can. I know of two cases where officers have been disciplined in deadly force encounters, up to including termination during my career. These are obviously very tragic incidents, and I think our investigation, as OIR pointed out by the homicide team and internal affairs, was very thorough, and they asked very difficult questions by the people involved.
Thank you, Chief. Commissioner Fritz, do you have any questions directed to the authors of the report? Should we bring them forward?
Just one.
So if the OIR group could come back, and we'd ask you to join us for a moment. Thank you.
And that is in regard to the issue that was raised by a couple of the folks testifying with regard to the transit police having a different command, and the issue that was raised by Dan Handelman regarding the commanding officer being voting on the use of force reviews. Did you have any recommendations on that?
We did not. We know that there has been a lot of discussion and debate on that issue, and we know that there have been various schools of thought about whether that's appropriate. I know Park, I think, recommended that the commanding officer not be a voting member, but we only had one incident to really base our recommendations on. It didn't feel that should overcome the discussion that has taken place in the past few days, actually, about this issue.
Thank you.
Mayor Adams, do you have any questions?
I don't know if the question that you can answer to our consultants, but can you give us a professional, personal comparison of how the city of Portland, your police, is on these issues of excessive use of force training to deal effectively and compassionately with people with mental health. Are there things not included in your report that you reviewed a specific incident that you feel? And then, second question, are there areas based on your time on this specific issue that you feel merit additional examination and review? I'm just asking for your individual professional judgment.
You can choose who.
I'd really rather you do it.
Michael, you can choose who responds.
Yes, I'll have Julie take a crack at it.
Ms. Rulin?
Yeah, sorry, I've been listening to Mike talk all evening. wasn't ready for the microphone. I think that Mayor, can you just I thought as you were saying it that I should be writing notes about your question, and I apologize, but if you could kind of give it to me again, I'd appreciate it.
How do we compare to other police agencies that you work with in terms of are we moving in the right direction faster than other local government police agencies? Are we in the middle of the pack? Are we lagging? If there's any sort of comparative observation that you have, how we're doing this in the area of excessive use of force, dealing with vulnerable citizens.
Got it. Okay. I think, first off, we looked at this one incident, and we didn't look at use of force numbers. We didn't look at patterns. And so I don't want to make a broad statement about how the Bureau does on disciplining officers on use of force. That's something that was beyond the scope of our review. I will say that we were very impressed with the Bureau and their openness to our review and their willingness to look critically at itself following this incident. There were a number of recommendations that came out of the training division that the Bureau quickly acted on that we thought were relevant and useful. We go through some of those and make some suggestions for ways that even those could be improved upon. But in terms of comparing the Bureau to other agencies, I think we were, in short, just impressed with this Bureau's ability to open itself up to outside review and to take corrective actions when they see it's necessary.
Another question that seeks to draw upon your personal, professional experience and education. In the operational areas covered by the review of this one case, how do we define success? The excessive use of force leading to someone's death, preventing that unnecessary tragic death is obviously a metric, but what is best practice in terms of metrics that prevent these kinds of incidents from happening?
Mayor, this is Michael Giannacco, and the question you raise is one that is difficult to sort of measure success in these areas, but I would measure them by one, the way in which each of these critical incidents are investigated and then reviewed, and the review is important as they come and are challenging the Bureau and other interested stakeholders. Each case, haven't seen yet a perfect in custody death situation. I haven't seen yet a perfect officer-involved shooting. By that, I mean that there can be learning and should be learning with regard to each of these incidents. And the way you, I think, can best detect that a bureau or a police agency is, in fact, learning from these is by the product put out by the bureau and perhaps promulgated throughout an independent oversight group like IPR. So the homework that is done by any bureau in investigating and then reviewing these cases through the prisms of individual accountability, systemic reform, policy development, equipment, and supervision all need to be carefully assessed, objectively assessed, with the help of outside eyes and ears. And then, most importantly, that homework needs to be demonstrated to its community. And I can, you know, tell you this about comparison to other similarly situated police agencies. Many times, similarly situated police agencies have a very cursory investigation. There's a presentation to a district attorney that's also very cursory. There's no grand jury investigation of any sort. And most importantly, for purposes of our review, any kind of internal investigation is sometimes just a repackaging of that cursory investigation. And then any review at all is simply the chief of police looking at the report, checking it off, initialing it as received, and putting it on the shelf. So those are the kinds of comparisons that, you know, anecdotally we'd make based on our review of other agencies. That being said, when we went about, and our intent on doing this review was to ensure that the City of Portland and its bureau not rest on its accomplishment, not rest on what it's already done, but continue to get better. And there were certainly areas for improvement here. There was a letdown to the community with regard to, and if anything, the pace of this investigation. And I think that we tried our best to help the Bureau come up with ways to forestall a delayed investigation from occurring in the future.
Thank you very much.
Further questions? Thank you all.
Thank you.
We have before us a report submitted by the auditor. We have been asked to accept this report. Is there a motion to accept the report?
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
The motion has been moved and seconded. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
This report was on why it took so long to review this incident and what could be done to make the police bureau's practices better in regards to review of tragic instances and use of force. And I thank the consultants very much for your diligence and thank the auditor indeed for initiating this report. Former police commissioner Dan Salzman embraced the doing of it and directed the bureau to cooperate. And certainly Chief Sizer and Chief Reese have done that, and the community will benefit. And the diligence of the report and this airing in public is a tribute to James Chassie and to his memory, and that we are committed to doing things better and to avoid, to the extent we possibly can, having these things happen again. I appreciate Chani's point that this has happened again. I appreciated many of the points that were made in testimony, particularly Jason Renault's one, that this was not a failure of the mental health system. This was not a failure of the housing system. Mr. Chassie was housed, was in treatment, and had indeed been seen by Project Respond and a police officer together 2 days prior to this incident. So there are certainly things that we need to do, we can do, and we are doing to actually have a system of caring for people with mental illnesses in our society, which after working at OHSU in inpatient psychiatry for 22 years, I came to believe that we don't have a system. And we have a great opportunity with the Bazelon Project. And I agree with Assistant Chief Hendricks that just having everybody involved sitting in the room and looking at the data, figuring out how to do things better is a tremendous opportunity and indeed something that is very meaningful to participate in. We've already identified some of the things that need to be improved, including who is dispatched, whether it's the police or Project Respond, and how the Bureau of Emergency Communications, which I'm in charge of, can help provide better care for folks. But we had a discussion at the meeting last week about the Bazelon Project, the Bazelon Law Institute school, that would eliminate police interactions with people with mental illness. Well, that's not a realistic goal any more than eliminating police interactions with women is a realistic goal. There are people in our community who are experiencing mental illness who have the right to be on the street and who have the right to be treated with courtesy and care. It was very troubling to read this report. It was very troubling to read about the lack of care for an individual who was hurt and then died. And I appreciate the response of the police that indeed they will make changes in the policies and procedures, and I would like to be involved in some of those. We, in psychiatry, has been a huge change in how violent people are treated within hospitals. Now, recognizing that hospitals are very different from the open street. The folks who are in the hospital have been searched already. We know that they may have some kind of a weapon, but they probably don't have a gun. So that's different, but under the leadership of Maggie Bennington Davis, who works at Cascadia and who is a leader in the country on this, in psychiatry we've moved to more of a sanctuary model, where instead of taking control for the person having difficulties, we respect that person's right to have some space and we try to keep the outside environment safe for them. And that was difficult for me, as having worked in psychiatry for 20 years when this was instituted. That was different from the way I had been taught was a compassionate way to take care of people. And it took my supervisors saying, we are going to do it differently. And we are going to make sure that you, the staff, are not in any greater danger. And in fact, as it turned out, moving to the sanctuary model, we tracked and found that our staff actually had fewer injuries by using a more compassionate model. That intervening and taking folks down by force, that in itself was causing injuries to the staff. And so it is going to take a top-down approach from the police to change the practices and to give our officers the responsibility to act compassionately as well as within policy. And I know that in Chief Reese, as in Chief Sizer, that we have leaders who are committed to being peace officers, and that is something that we need to embrace as a community. There's been a lot of work done over the past 18 months that I've been in office, and more needs to be done. And our citizens are engaged, and as we heard, that we've made significant improvements in the independent police review process, in the citizen review committee. We, I think, are moving in the right direction. And at this point, we need to cautiously respect each other's willingness to do that and to have the whole community suspend disbelief and to try to encourage everybody to be in this for the common good. We do need to keep the public involved of ongoing investigations and to improve the communication between the internal auditing division, the independent police review, and the CRC, and so that then information can get out to the public. And I appreciated Michael Bingham saying that he will work on that. I think we do need to work on transit police training and policies and expect some combined training, including with our downtown private security forces who patrol the transit mall, that we should expect that there should be common policies and common training for those officers who are assigned to do this work. And we do need to continue to put money into the mental health system and to continue our work to improve it. This council is. We dedicated $2 million for structural improvements in the Hooper Detox Center and close to $1 million ongoing to provide services to that facility, and we have many other strategies. Commissioner Saltzman and I worked on a report published in April that outlined the other things that we can do outside of the police bureau and including in the bureau. And we will continue to do that. We all need to work together, and I think this report helps move us in that direction. It gives us the factual basis to do that, and I greatly appreciate that everybody is here tonight to participate in the discussion of how can we do better to honor James Chassie. Aye.
Fish?
Well, it's been a long day. I want to thank the mayor, who's homesick, who has participated fully all morning and this evening, for being fully engaged on this issue. I want to thank my colleagues, and I associate myself with Commissioner Fritz's remarks, so I will be brief. This morning, we settled the lawsuit brought by Mr. Chassie's estate against the city. In my view, it was long overdue. As I said then, however, while the ordinance we adopted settled the lawsuit, it did not settle the matter. I concur with Commissioner Fritz that we have made progress and that we are making progress. After reading this sobering report and listening to the testimony tonight, I also believe we have a lot of work to do in the future, and it's work we must do together. I want to especially thank a few people this evening. Auditor Yvonne Griffin Vallade, thank you for initiating this report and for bringing it forward and for ensuring that the council received full and complete briefings on this matter prior to the hearing. And thank you for your leadership on the reform agenda, which you and your office have tackled so ambitiously. I'd like to thank the OIR group for their report. Everyone is entitled to their view of this report, but I think we can all agree that it was clearly written and contained recommendations which are within our reach. And so I thank you for your work and for your testimony tonight. I want to thank Chief Reese. Chief Reese did not get a honeymoon when he took this job. In fact, from the very first day, he's had his hands full, but he is a good man, and I think he's the right man for the job at this time. And it is a pleasure to work with him, and when he says that his bureau agrees with the majority of these recommendations and will take actions to implement them, I have a high degree of confidence that he will follow through on that charge. I want to thank those who came to testify tonight, to our invited panel, and also to those members of the public who joined us and shared their views. This is a somber day. This is a day I hope we do not repeat in the near future. But I do believe we have shined a light on this matter. I believe we have more information and a more thoughtful approach for how to move forward, with obviously the shared goal of making sure that something like this does not happen again. Aye.
Adams?
Well, the failure of the city effectively and in a timely manner investigate this use of deadly force is salt in the wounds for the Chassie family, who suffered what I think is an unnecessary loss of their family member. Earlier this morning, as mayor and now as police commissioner, I apologize to the family for the fact that this took place, and I vow this evening to do everything I can as police commissioner, working with our new police chief and the Bureau team, to make sure that the notion of officers of the peace is one that is widely shared by all members of the community, regardless of one's station in life, whether temporary or permanent. There's a lot more work to be done. It's going to take all of us. I also want to, in incident tragedies like this, I also, and this, you know, represents a failure by city government on a number of important levels. But I also want to just close by thanking those members of the police bureau who effectively, compassionately, and with great care seek to keep the peace in Portland. I know talking to members of the police bureau on a daily basis how demoralizing something like this is. But it's important that we air it out to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Aye.
The report is adopted, and council is adjourned.